This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 7:07. You're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn and Sharmila. And before we get to our next story, a quick look back at the messages that we've been getting throughout the show, particularly for Inside Story, actually, as well as today on Twitter. Miles apart in terms of tone, I will say, because Inside Story was rather serious. We were talking about the fact that the Prime Minister said that one of the reasons why the chicken price subsidies was being reduced was so that the savings could go into BKM and be directed to Malaysians who need it. That part's okay. But another element of that statement was, well, previously everybody was enjoying that subsidy, including foreign workers and Rohingya refugees. And I think that's the part that has a lot more questions being asked. So we've been asking you for your thoughts. On today on Twitter, it was about how back in the day, Mee Hoon cost 10 cents, basically. And we've been asking you for what's your back in the day something cost something story. And there are lots of really sweet ones coming in. Breakfast features very heavily, which I think is something we could have anticipated. Before we get there, though, Inside Story messages.
Well, you say miles apart, but actually they are kind of linked in a weird way, aren't they?
Money.
They're both really about money and how things cost more. Anyway, on that tone of subsidies, Mark says, the government strategy has been to divide the population, one rule for one part, one rule for another. This chicken subsidy is trying to divide us and migrants who also enjoy the same benefit. Just by that same case, just the same case for On95, where the discussion was between us and Singaporeans. In that same logic, should we have different government benefits for different tax brackets? Should I not be entitled to more benefits if I'm contributing more? This is nonsense.
Yeah, I think, Mark, you make several good arguments because the same sort of basic thought is coming through from Rosalind, who says, cash aid to Malaysians, it's more like only a certain category of Malaysians. What about non-BKM receivers? We are taxpayers too. And, you know, this gets at the difficulty in some ways of talking about subsidies, which we addressed in our previous show on it, right? Which is that on the one hand, I think when we talk about wastage, most of us, I think, would be in favour of people who need more assistance getting more assistance. There's no reason why somebody who is earning 20,000 ringgit a month, for example, why they should necessarily have the same access to aid as somebody who is getting by on an hourly or daily salary. But having said that, where is that spending going, right? And are we seeing it done in the best possible way? As taxpayers, are we happy with the kinds of assistance that we see being provided?
Hence that conversation about the B60 versus the B40, right? All the M40 category that is basically falling through the gaps but not getting the kind of assistance they need because they're perceived as not needing that kind of financial help.
Legion says the ministers are also enjoying chicken subsidies.
Well, indeed.
Yeah, that's the thing. There are lots of messages that are coming in where the only response is, you are right. And, you know, I think that falls into that category. All right, keep those thoughts coming. In the meantime, we're heading back to the back in my day story, where there are lots of really lovely, nostalgic messages coming through that are also making living in 2022 quite painful sounding. I'm going to start with this one, though, from Stephen, because Stephen is offering a bit of a balm, saying something that doesn't hike in price are phone plans. Back then, a phone call could cost almost 50 cents a minute, SMS about 20 to 30 cents. I've forgotten these days. You had to space them out a bit. IDD calls were in ringgit per minute. Your credit will be fully burnt in no time if you've accidentally used the GPRS or internet service. At least WhatsApp is free. Calls are unlimited nowadays. Data plan is free. Patrick, meanwhile, says, back in the days where one could spend a few hundred ringgit to buy a phone that would last through a war, now phones cost a few thousands and last one fall.
Firstly, the horror of accidentally switching on your GPRS when you're traveling and then realizing you're going to be charged a bomb. I still feel that.
The horror of being out and about and realizing you're out of credit and the shops are closed.
Ooh. Yes. But the thing is, it's not because they've gone down, is it? It's because we now have data calls. So I think that's really the progress that we've made here. But DL says, back in my day, movie tickets were... I love saying it in that tone. I feel like it has to be said that way. Movie tickets were ringgit for upper level. Roti canai kosong was 30 cents. A bowl of noodles and a plate of nasi lemak during primary school was 30 cents per serving. A plate of mixed rice at 150 per plate during secondary school. A portion of meat, usually two pieces bigger than bite-sized fried chicken. One portion veggie and one fried egg.
Nice.
Very specific.
Very specific. Quite delicious sounding and also very economical, I think. All right. We have Rosalind who says, I remembered watching SWALK. I think that's how it's said. When I looked it up, the movie is Melody, I believe, at Rex Cinema in KL City 5 times, 65 cents. So you sneak in off peak. It's FOC. The treat will be ABC, 10 cents a bowl, or a more luxurious is chunky ice cream at 30 cents a scoop. I also remember taking a bus for 6 cents, Jalan Pudu to Salak South Garden. Helen, meanwhile, also on the bus. Back in my day, a mini bus ride at 1 ringgit to get home from work.
Oh, I remember the days when bus rides cost so little.
Actually, mini buses are in their entire own back in my day category.
Kyril says, we don't need to look very far back. 2 years ago, I could have a nice breakfast for 5 ringgit or less. Now it costs me about 10 ringgit.
This is true, actually. And you're right that... You're right. That's depressing. I actually don't have any more, much more to add to that. It's quite unfortunate. Like we said, breakfast is a big theme. Adli says, syrup drink at my primary school, 5 cents. Nasi lemak without egg, 10 cents. With a telur, normally reserved for teachers, 20 cents. Mind you, it was a whole boiled egg, unlike today, which is 1/8.
Yes, the reduction of the egg is actually sometimes quite telling. When you used to get half an egg, now you get a quarter, then you get like a wedge.
I don't want to revive our nasi lemak battle because it almost tore us apart.
We've never really
come back from it. But I think that condiments, because I love condiments on my nasi lemak, is also a great way to benchmark. Not just the egg, but the stuff that would actually be cheaper, the kacang, the bilis. Mm. Like you can actually tell when things start to get a little teaspoonish.
Two peanuts and we're done. Yeah. Shaz says, my dad bought a house in the 80s for 50,000 ringgit. Now try 500,000.
Once we move away from food and into property where we're getting serious. Meezy says, in the mid-1980s, a Western set lunch with soup, a main course of fish or chicken, ice cream and espresso was 11.90 net at a coffee house in Wismar Genting, KL.
Wow.
It's a sweet deal.
For Western set lunch some more, don't play.
Yeah. I'm wondering if there's a bun with the soup. Yeah, but at this point, I'm just asking for too much.
Let's see. We have Wallace saying, back in the early 90s, when I enrolled in college, I stayed in Taman Bunga Raya Stapa. I was shocked that the mixed rice dish only cost 1 ringgit 50 cents for 3 veggie and 1 meat. Free flow of soup and Chinese tea. I'm from Labuan. Mixed rice dish is usually 3 ringgit 50 cents to 5 ringgit.
The price shock, the sticker shock, going from here to Sabah, Sarawak is a real thing. And it happens even now, right? Where you go over and you're like, $5. And then you realize that this is the norm. I mean, it's something that we adjust to when we see the magazine prices, I think, when we were growing up. But when you go there and you actually pay for food, it's quite different. Darren says, petrol price was 1 ringgit 10 cents per litre when I started driving and there was no RON 95 yet. Again, a depressing and sobering truth. All right. Keep those thoughts coming. What did things cost back in your day? Share a benchmark of any kind. We are welcoming it all. And after this, we are instead going to be moving on to basically a recent ruling from the Selangor High Court in relation to residents' associations, guarded communities and local councils. So keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 7:17 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn and Sharmila. And now we're looking into a ruling from Selangor High Court on guarded communities and the rules that they can impose.
So a high court here has ruled that a residents association in PJ cannot order those living in the guarded community but refuse to pay the monthly service fee to basically make the residents operate the automated boom gates themselves. Now, it's a bit of a journey to get to this point. But Judge Shahna Sulaiman has said that this is because MBPJ, which basically ordered the association to rescind that directive, has the authority to prohibit any association under its authority from imposing these sorts of conditions on homeowners.
Unreasonable conditions, in fact.
I was trying to remain neutral, but actually since that's in the actual judgment, I think we're fine.
So I think this caught our attention mostly because it is, I think it's relatively common, these sorts of conflicts in a lot of tamans, in a lot of residential neighbourhoods. It might not manifest exactly like this. It might not be about automated boom gates and who has to operate them. But the push and pull of, if I don't pay, then how? When it comes to a guarded community and where the local council comes in, I think all of these are themes that if you don't live in an area that has a problem like this, you know somebody who lives in an area that has a problem like this. So we're going to try to understand what exactly the court case entailed and where the ruling is coming from. So let us know. Do you have a residents association in your area and have you experienced these sorts of issues? You can call us, WhatsApp us, tweet us. Speaking with us on this now is John Chan, partner at Mawing Kwai and Associates. John, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, hello, Lynn and Shamila. Thanks for having me today.
So we were quite brief on this, but can you give us a sort of rundown on what the case involves? I mean, what was the back and forth here between the residents association in question and MBPJ?
Sure. I'll try to be as brief as possible. Well, back in December of 2020, the Parkville Residents Association applied to operate a guarded community. And this was approved by MPPJ in December. And so the approval came with MPPJ's existing standard restriction that the association cannot impose the condition that defaulters and non-members of the association have to operate the boom gates themselves when entering or exiting the residential area. Let's call this the self-service rule for today. However, the Residents Association then responded to MPPJ and informed MPPJ that they will be going ahead with this self-service rule, relying on a 2015 federal court ruling, saying that they are entitled to do so. And so flowing from that, MPPJ again maintained its stance and directed that the association stop imposing this self-service rule. And so in March 2022, the president of the association filed a judicial review application to challenge this MPPJ's decision. So the High Court recently dismissed the judicial review, mainly on the ground that MPPJ's guideline to not allow the association's self-service rule was not illegal, irrational, or unreasonable. The court also held that the association's approval to operate as a guarded community, is under the purview of MPPJ, and so MPPJ has the power to prohibit the association under its authority from imposing this unreasonable condition. And that the federal court decision, which the association relied on, is also not relevant to the case because the issue here was pertaining to whether MPPJ can impose such a restriction on the association.
So Judge Shahna Sulaiman found that the council's decision not to allow the association to impose that rule wasn't illegal, irrational, or unreasonable. Could you tell us how these parameters are determined, particularly the irrational or unreasonable part?
Right. So fortunately, we have the judge's grounds of judgment. And from that text, we can see two factors which the judge relied on to determine that MPPJ's decision was not illegal, irrational, or unreasonable. She said that the self-service rule is not something necessary or conducive for public safety, health, and convenience. And these words were taken directly from the Local Government Act 1976. And secondly, the other factor is that this condition by MPPJ is not new to the association because it was imposed on the same association back in 2018 and even in 2020. However, the association never raised any issue regarding this condition back then.
So These sorts of setups, right? Guarded communities in residential areas, I think, have become increasingly common. If you drive around, you'll see these boom gates all over the place. How often do we see these sorts of disputes arise?
Well, we see these types of cases in court fairly often. Most of the time when residents are dissatisfied with decisions or restrictions by the association or even the local council. And this is quite similar to strata developments where they have there has been increase of disputes between developers, joint management bodies, management corporations, and the parcel owners themselves. So examples would include the usual claim for outstanding fees to the alleged restriction of access and enjoyment of common facilities, right down to allegations of misappropriation of funds by the association committees.
So what are the general guidelines or laws that exist when it comes to issues with gated communities?
As we saw in this recent case, the guarded community is established under the Residents Association, which is under the purview of the respective local council. And local councils have authority to regulate guarded communities by way of the existing Local Government Act, Street Drainage and Building Act, and also the Town and Country Planning Act, which would be applicable to everyone anyway. For example, the prohibition of building of an obstruction in a public place. And so for this case, for MPBJ, their guideline is called the Guarded Community Guidelines, and in Malay is the Garis Panduan Community Berpengawal.
So MPBJ is in the mix. What specific authority do they have when it comes to guarded communities? And I guess, what does this case now further establish in that regard?
Firstly, as explained just now, the general one would be the general compliance with existing laws for everyone of the public. But coming specifically to the MPBJ's guidelines, we can see that there are restrictions which say that the guarded communities can only be formed in areas with no public facilities like schools, places of worship, and public bus routes. The residents' association must be duly registered under the law with ROS. There must be 75% agreement from the total residents to participate in this guarded scheme. There's even goes as specific as the specifications of the guardhouse and speed bumps to be erected. And another example would be that the security guards have to be registered with the Home Ministry.
So you mentioned the Act earlier, but when it comes to actual day-to-day issues, right, how much authority do guarded communities have over their residents? I mean, how far can they compel residents to follow decisions or regulations that have been set?
Yes, so while local councils have authority over the Residents Association, but Residents Association's authority over their members is a tricky issue. Because they mainly depend, they go back to the local council guidelines and approvals. And it's mainly more restrictions than allowance. So if you take MPBJ's guidelines, for example, the association cannot make defaulters and non-members operate the boom gate themselves as affirmed by the High Court. The association cannot withhold identity cards of visitors who are entering the area. The guards also cannot stop any vehicle or anyone from going in on the basis that the roads are still public roads. So when it comes and when the issue of outstanding fees arise, the association really just needs to initiate a suit against the defaulters for the outstanding based on the breach of contract.
So what larger impact do you see this case having for disputes between residents, associations and local councils, especially because, as you pointed out earlier, they're a relatively common thing, right, in courts?
Yep. So flowing from the High Court judgment, we may see now local councils barring residents' associations from imposing the self-service rule on non-paying residents and visitors or non-members. But really, we will see all the stakeholders will have to go back to their local council guidelines or their written approvals and letters received from the local councils to check whether there's any non-compliance. And if yes, this may open up to more disputes and legal arguments. The residents' associations and security consultants may also come up with newer and more creative ways of enforcing security, which are not covered by MPBJ's guidelines right now. And from a local council's perspective, we may also see them being more bold and creative in issuing newer guidelines, directives, and restrictions on these associations and guarded communities. So there may we may see a rise in disputes in court after this.
We have about a minute left. What would you like to leave us with?
Let's not forget that this case has been appealed to the Court of Appeal, and the appellate courts may take into account other factors in affirming or reversing the High Court's decision. But till then, this High Court's decision affirms the MPBJ's policy of non-discrimination between paying and non-paying member and non-member homeowners, and also other road users in general. At the end of the day, MPBJ, the associations, and even residents will have to ask themselves whether their decisions and actions are necessary or conducive to public safety, health, and convenience, as put by the High Court, and whether they are rational and reasonable, and in the future, how their respective positions would stand up in court if challenged.
John, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
That was John Chan, partner at Mao Wing Kwai and Associates, helping us unpack a recent High Court ruling surrounding residents' associations and the local council, and basically, I think, kind of delineating more clearly, right, what power and authority each has, especially when it comes to the issue of guarded communities. Let us know what you think. Again, is this something that you have actually experienced? You can let us know by WhatsApping 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.